Blog Talk Radio.
Stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello, world. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge with Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And we have tonight a special guest night, and we have a very special guest, Victoria Kelly from Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota. But before we bring her on, I'd like to give out the telephone number to call in and support Victoria tonight. The number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And we would love to have you call in and be a panelist tonight on the show. And before we bring on Victoria, we'd also like to talk about the mission of NASCA and AASCA.org. We're a nonprofit, 501c3, supported through contributions, which are tax deductible. We're all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with two goals. Number one, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery from child abuse. Okay, so without further ado, I'm going to read a little bit of Victoria's bio. She has a very profound, deep story and has a lot to share with us. She's a child abuse survivor and longtime NASCA family member and volunteer. She's also the ambassador for Minneapolis. Victoria was abused almost from birth in nearly every way imaginable. She was sexually assaulted starting as a baby, an experience that was repeated by numerous predators and perpetrators that went on and on. She had an alcoholic father, and I think her father beat both Victoria and her mother. So I'm not going to go in deep into Victoria's story. I'm going to let her tell her own story. First, I want to welcome Elizabeth from Illinois on the panel tonight, who will be interacting with my co-host, Mark, and myself. So, Victoria, we're very happy to have you on tonight. Sorry if there was any confusion about, I hope there wasn't much confusion. I did reach out to a bunch of people, family members, and let them know you're on tonight. So we should be getting some calls on the panel.
Yeah. Well, it's all recorded, too, so that's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this is the fourth time I've been on the show, so I've told my story a lot. A lot. And
okay.
I can go into a little bit, but I'd kind of like to focus on some other stuff that I'm doing as far as outreach, and because, you know, I've gone beyond the what do you want to say, the healing. Well, not, I'll be healing till the day I take my last breath, but I've done a lot of healing. I've been in therapy since I'm, you know, was 21, and I'm 59 now. So I've been in a lot of therapy and hospitals and things like that. But yes, my abuse had started as an infant. Matter of fact, my dad said the day that I came home from the hospital, I wanted to suck on his penis. So we'll start out with just being very blunt, because that's kind of how I am. And I've been volunteering with the Battered Women Sexual Assault Movement, whatever, since 1986. When I left my son's father and ended up in a battered woman shelter, my first husband was abusive to me, but he never hit me. So I didn't think I qualified to go to a shelter. But when I was a year old, my mother told me later on in life that, because I asked her, why did you, you know, give me up? And what happened is she sent me and my two brothers from Louisiana to Minnesota on a train with our babysitter to my grandparents' house, her mother and stepmother. And I didn't know they were my grandparents. I thought they were my parents because they just gave me their last name and stuck me in school with their last name. And I didn't know that they weren't my real parents. But as far back as I can remember, like, I can remember them bringing me in bars because they were alcoholics. They drank on the weekends, and my grandfather drank every night. But as far back as I can remember, like, in the bars, these guys would grab me and put me on their laps and fondle me and, like, kiss me and everything. And oh, it's horrible, you know? And I know my grandparents saw it. And yeah. At one point I told my grandmother, I said, I don't like it when those guys do that. And her response was, well, they just think you're cute. And, oh, you know. I think back because I've got two children of my own. If I ever saw anybody doing that to either one of my children, I would just be livid, you know.
Absolutely.
And so it just, yeah, it just really, you know, I look. And the thing is, a lot of times, you know, I really kind of, when I got into therapy, kind of poo-pooed everything off, you know, like it wasn't that big of a deal. But now I look back at little kids that are, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old. And especially when I had my kids, you know, it was like all these things started becoming more apparent, you know, about what kind of trauma it must have been for me as a little kid, you know, with that stuff happening. And my neighbor ended up raping a 3- and 4-year-old neighbor girls, and they prosecuted them. And so one day a police officer came to the house, was talking to my grandma, and she called me over there, and she said, policeman wants to ask you a question. And I don't even know how old it was, 6 or 7 maybe. And what happened is, you know, I would go over to this neighbor's house, and we'd play this game called Sorry, and he had strawberries in his yard, and he started fondling me, you know. And then I don't know how long it went on. I've got just bits of memories. And anyway, I remember him asking me one day, do you tell, you know, your mom everything that goes on over here? And I said, yeah. And then he stopped. But my grandma, we never went to church or anything. My grandma said, if you lie, you go to hell. But in my little kid mind, I'm thinking, you know, going to hell was better than being fondled by that man. You know? And so I really, had really distorted, you know, a lot of distorted things. So anyway, the cop comes to the door, and when my grandma calls me over, she says, he wants to ask you a question. And he just basically kind of said, did that man over there ever, you know, Mr. Belt, I'll name him, I'm sure he's dead and gone. And did he ever, you know, touch you where you didn't like him to or something like that? I'm not quite sure what he said. But I remember looking at my grandma's eyes, and she just got this really worried look on her face, you know. And she just says, if anything happened, you need to tell the police officer, you know. And I said, yeah, he did. And, of course, I'm standing there at the door telling the cop. And then it wasn't talked about, you know. And all of a sudden, one day, my grandma says, tomorrow we're going to the courthouse, and you have to tell the judge what happened to you, and you can't lie to the judge. So, okay. So we're on our way over, and she keeps telling me, you can't lie to the judge, don't lie to the judge, da, 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 to get the law, all that. So anyway, I get there, and the judge brings me in his chambers, and he's sitting there, and I'm sitting there, and he says, you know, what did Ms. Bell do to you? And I said, well, he put his hand in my pants and touched my pee-pee, like that, and then, I don't understand, show me. Oh, yeah, it felt just like what the other guy was doing to me, the guy that, you know, is horrible. So I really, yeah, you know, didn't feel like anybody was, you know, cared about me, was protecting me, nothing, you know. And
you lived back in the day, yes.
Huh?
You lived back in the day like I did, and nobody talked about this stuff, you know?
Uh-uh. No. I mean, yeah. I didn't even have the correct words to describe my body parts, you know. It was usually just down there.
Right.
You know? You know?
Well,
anyway, yeah.
How many years, I know it's probably like you're saying, you have snapshots of different people
uh-huh.
that abused you.
And yeah.
So from what age to what age do you feel like you went through these snapshots of abuse?
That was pretty much that. And then I don't remember a whole lot in the middle, but I don't really know if there was abuse in the middle or if I just kind of like, because I developed multiple personality disorder. Of course, I never knew it till I was way late in adulthood. But I think because of the trauma, it just kind of blacked out things, you know, and different alters took over to take care of business, you know. I don't recall any other abuse until I was 15. And, well, my dad, my biological dad, I only seen him like, okay, so all of a sudden one weekend, my grandma says, I was about 8 or 9. And the neighbor came up to me and says, those aren't your parents, those are your grandparents. No, they're not. And I went home and I started crying, you know, and said, and that's when my grandma told me that they were actually my parents, or my grandparents. And said, yeah,
wow.
Your mama's going to adopt you out into anybody in Louisiana who wanted you. And we had to take you. And after that, we had to take you. I had a really good job waitressing, and we lived in a really nice house. And my grandfather was an over-road truck driver, and he had to stop doing that and just be like an in-town truck driver. And my grandparents took in me and my brother, you know. And so my grandmother didn't like boys, so she beat my brother all the time. And I said, that's the, you know, I don't know if a lot of people really understand that, like, even if you aren't the person that's being beat or whatever, I can't remember what it's called, secondhand abuse, something like that.
Right.
But anyway, you want to protect them.
Right. And I was going to ask you, your alcoholic father beat both you and your mother. I mean,
well, he beat my mother before they even got married. Well, he beat my mom even before. So anyway, my mom put, I don't know about, you know, before, but my mom put us on a train when I was a year. My other brother was 2.5. My other brother was 3.5. So the brother that was 2.5, he came to live with me and my grandparents. And it was my step-grandmother. So her daughter ended up taking my older brother. So for a long time, I thought he was my cousin, you know. But I once found out they were my, you know, I always thought he was my cousin. Until he told me one time, and then he got beat and tied to, stripped naked and tied to a tree by my uncle all night long for telling, you know. So, like, you keep secrets, you know. You learn to keep secrets.
Did you witness that?
Huh?
Did you, were you a witness to that?
No, I wasn't witness. I didn't witness it. No. He told me later in life about it. Mm-hmm. But my grandmother beat
Did
my brother all the time.
And you were a witness to that?
Oh, all the time, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she always, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, always beat him. I can remember one time we were just taking our clothes off behind some trees. And I think there was some other kids there. I don't know. We were all just like kid stuff, you know, like appearing. You know, that was about it. And anyway, my grandmother found out and beat the shit out of my brother. And when I tried to say I was there too and I was doing it, you know, she beat him even worse. Saying, look, she's trying to, you know, take the blame for something that you did to her. And it, you know, no matter what happened, if I tried to stick up for him, you know, he'd get it worse. And it was real sick shit. So anyway, my aunt and uncle divorced because she was getting beat and by her husband. And my older brother came to live with us. And my grandma couldn't handle two boys because she hated boys. She just hated them. And as far back as I can remember, she said, you know, all men want is sex. And I can remember being like 7 or 8. She said, when you get married, she said, and your husband takes you to a hotel, like I'm a kid, you know, husband takes you to a hotel on your honeymoon, go in the bathroom and lock the door because all those men want is sex.
Oh.
Like, you're not going to want to have sex with your husband? You know, and she also told me if you're not a virgin, then no man will want you, you know. So when I was like 15 years old, and I was in bars all the time with them on weekends, started drinking with them. And at that time, if you're the person that's taking care of you, well, they had adopted me when I was 13. If your parents said that you could drink in a bar, you could, you know. So I was like, you know, 14, 15, drinking in a bar, and I started waitressing in a bar at 15, which both, you know, that was legal, but I still did. And they didn't seem to care. And anyway, yeah, and so this guy invited me and my cousin to go out and to his place and get high. So we were smoking pot and drinking, and the guy grabbed me and dragged me into his bedroom. And, you know, I'd been used to having boyfriends that, you know, you said no and they listened. And, you know, I said, no. He started kissing me. That was fine. But then he, you know, started pushing me on the bed and stuff. And, well, long story short, he raped me and I had a Tampax in, you know.
Oh.
And, yeah, so... Yeah, so I was screaming my head off, obviously. And the more I screamed, the more I kept saying, yeah, I know you love it, you love it, you love it, you know.
My God.
But before, I think it was before that. So I didn't really see my dad except for on once a year we'd have family reunions, you know, and I'd see him. But he didn't really... I didn't really, I just knew he was my dad and that was about it. And I never really talked to him or anything. And he came to, I was in dancing for 8 years, which I absolutely loved. and he came to one of my dance recitals, and it kind of felt creepy around him, you know, but I really didn't know why. And anyway, he was coming, invited him to an art show that I had because I loved art. I still do. And so anyway, he was coming, and I was sitting at the cafeteria with my girlfriend, and I said, my dad's coming to this art show, and are you guys ever afraid of your dad? And one says, yeah, my dad gets mad. He really screams, you know, and then, and the other one goes, yeah, my dad, you know, spanks me if I do something really bad. Well, that was, you know, back then that was just the thing. And anyway, you know, they all told me, and I'm like, no. I go, it feels more like a life or death situation, you know. And the looks they gave me, it was like I knew to change the topic. So anyway, he came to my art show, and then he said he'd take me home. Well, he didn't take me home. He took me to some apartment somewhere and raped me. And then brought me home.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Your biological father?
Yeah, my biological father, yeah.
How many times did he ever rape?
The next time he came after me was when I was 17. And it was around Thanksgiving. And my mom had called me up. And I saw my mom every year. My mom was in a carnival. And I think I was 11 or 12, and my two brothers, like I said, my other brother came to live with us, and my mom called up and said that she's going to take my one brother because she got married, you know. And my grandfather said, oh, you're taking the good one and leaving the bad one here? So she came and got both my brothers. Anyway, they went out there, and I found out later, just like a few years back, that the first night they got there and every night after that, their stepdad raped them and said, if you tell your mom or anybody else, then you'll never see your mom again. Yeah.
Raped the boy?
So when I was, huh? My brothers, yeah.
Right, yeah. So let me ask you a question. Did your mom have a camper at one time?
Mm-mm. Well, she lived in a camper when
she
was in a carnival. Yeah. She was a stripper in a carnival for a while.
Didn't she pick y'all up in a camper and take y'all off to the beach and stuff like that, or different locations?
No. We'd go out and see her once a year in the carnival, and she'd kick off the day.
Okay.
You know. And then just like, you know, take us around all the games and because, you know, the carnival just came out in this area once a year. So, you know, we go see her.
All right.
But yeah.
Well,
so
we're gonna go
but
down
anyway, the... when I was 17, yeah, when I was 17, just quickly, when I was 17, my mom called me up and said that my dad had gotten a house. And she was there, my two brothers were there, and they wanted me to come out for Thanksgiving. And so I was kind of afraid because my dad was there, but I couldn't remember what he had done to me. You know, because like I said, I had MPD, and I didn't remember. And anyway, what happened was, went out there, and everybody was drinking and getting high. And of course, oh, that's pretty cool with your parents, you know. And my dad said, let's go for a walk. So it was way out in the country, and he took me for a walk way out in the fucking woods, excuse my French, out in the woods, and dragged me in this trailer out there and started anally raping me. My mother smashed through the door, and she had heard me from inside the house all the way through the woods. And so, what the F is going on here? So none of your business. Get the F out of here. And she did, and all I could think in my head is she's going to go get a baseball bat or call the cops, you know, and which she didn't either.
Right.
And that night he orchestrated all three of us together. Next day was Thanksgiving. Called my grandparents to come get me, and, you know, but he kept coming back after me. I didn't finally escape. He kept coming back. I didn't finally escape from him till I was 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
So can we go to the panel now?
Yep.
You're telling your story. You're being very brave, and we applaud you and honor you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
I know it's still
Thank
hard
you.
To do.
Yep.
Yes. Alyssa, you're on with
yep.
Victoria.
Victoria.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, who's this?
I'm a survivor with a testimony, and I was a victim of childhood sexual abuse. Never listened to me.
Yeah.
I'm listening to your story as I write down and I write things about
yeah.
survivors, but to the Great Spirit protect us mm-hmm. and shield us from all injustice. I'm lost right now for words for you because of the beatings and the child abuse and the things that your parents have done to you as a young
yeah.
woman. I never believed you, honey. I believe in all sexual crime victims. I believe we are all a testimony to justice, and we're seeking for justice for all, not just
mm-hmm.
the Native American indigenous as I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are also women that came and are here
mm-hmm.
that have been violated. And my condolence goes to you that your mother and your father should have listened to you and been there for you in support of you. And now
mm-hmm.
that you're older, 59, you're having to speak out about your injustice by your
yeah.
family.
So mm-hmm.
I, as an American Native woman, do not condone this. I do not accept this. I do
yeah.
not believe this is actually happening to our people today, color, creed, national origin.
Mm.
I want to send my love to you that the Great Spirit will heal you of your wounds.
Mm.
I've healed my wounds. I'm a survivor since I was a little girl.
Mm.
I'm sending condolences to you, love, that the Great Spirit will heal you. You may reach out to me anytime you may. Pamela and Mark on the panel said that what I believe
yeah.
your testimony, and I believe it is truth, and no one wants to accept that truth. Even in the police department, when you go to them and you tell them this person does the same to me, they don't listen to you. They ignore us. They put us in mute. And we deserve our statement that was told to them and our statement of fact that this
mm-hmm.
person done these things to me. And how
yeah.
am I going to recover? Well, when you go to the rape crisis centers and you see these people on these agencies, their institutions, and they're being funded by our United States government to help and support us, there's no support there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there. I mean, they're
no.
like, that happened to you, so be it. Go on with your life. No, you
yeah.
don't go on with your life. The Great Spirit says, I don't go on with no more. Enough
mm-hmm.
is enough. My people are my people, and now thy people are my people. And
I agree.
I never invited anyone in this country or any other continent to violate or validate a child that was innocent. So
yeah.
my goes to you, Victoria. That, may the Great Spirit be with you. May the Great Spirit heal your wounds, heal you, and give you comfort. May the Great Spirit be with you, that you're able to come on the show and the panel to speak in the behalf of your victimization. I just send my glory, and I send that smoke, and I send that sweet grass, and I send smoke and everything for you that you may recover from your atrocities that happened to you. My American Native. I'm American Native.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Cherokee Seminole.
Wonderful. Yeah.
I send my condolences. That the Great Spirit may heal you of your atrocities. She must give you peace of mind and comfort. And we may hear you back on the show again.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. Let me thank you in my language. I'm thankful that you and Martha brought me on tonight. I just speak with Victoria. Victoria, if you ever knew me or you saw me, you would feel my blessings and my honor that you're able to recover, because I'm a survivor myself. I lived my whole life child molestation and victimization. Even today, I was raped in 2011 and kidnapped, and a lot of people don't know that. I don't talk about my personal life because I know how you feel about your privacy. So I respect you. May the great spirit be with you, love.
Thank you so much.
Elizabeth, you're so sweet. Thank you for your words of support to Victoria. Okay. Thank you so much. I'm going to bring on Mary Ellen from New York. Mary Ellen, you're on with Victoria.
Hi, Victoria. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for coming on tonight, sharing your story. I'm here to support you, and I can feel your struggle as you have healed. It's not an easy path, I'm here to support that. And I know you're making progress, and you're doing great stuff. I want you to be happy, and I think it's very healing when we can speak our words and heal from those around us, accepting our story and trusting that we are honest. We know we have a right to be supported and understood, and Anaska does a great job of that. So for all those listening, I hope that they will find strength in your words, and I appreciate being able to be here for you tonight. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very, very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Maria. Before we go to Jessica, I'm going to give the number out again, 646-595-2118. If you want to call in and interact with our special guest, Victoria Kelly, 646-595-2118. Jessica, I'm bringing you on with Victoria.
Thanks,
Jessica,
Pamela.
Jessica's our and Victoria, Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Pamela. And Victoria, thank you so much for sharing your story. Your experience, strength, and hope has moved me. I identified with everything you said. I was first drawn and able to speak my truth about being a survivor of child sexual abuse for the first time when I was in a sweat lodge. The indigenous tradition has really been a big part of my healing. And I was very moved when Grandmother Turtle, who is the Lakota medicine woman who was pouring the lodge for us, explained that in the Lakota tradition, those of us who are able to survive the trauma and seek the truth and heal are chosen as strong warrior goddesses, because we are healing not just ourselves, but the belief in the Lakota tradition is that we can heal seven generations backwards and seven generations ahead of us.
Oh, I like
that. So I like to think of myself as a survivor, and I like to think that I can heal, generations and generations of trauma that's been going on. And, you know, I like to think that those of us who have been able to survive this, because not all of us are able to, that we have an obligation to speak about how painful it was for us. And expose ourselves, because I think once we're able to take that step come to terms with the fact that we should not feel any shame for anything that was done to us as children, we were real victims. And once we can, it was a real challenge for me to tangle with my own shame, but once I was able to make peace with it, I find people are really drawn to me and say, you know, there's something about you and ask me for advice.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because of I've been through so much. So
right.
I feel like you're a kindred soul, and I thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jessica. And Jessica, what is your, you said, are you an indigenous Native American yourself?
No, I wish. I just pretend I am. I've done two vision quests with a Lakota tradition, and I've been adopted by a Dene medicine man in Saskatchewan, Canada. But I wasn't born one in this lifetime, at least, but I have the greatest respect for the indigenous tradition.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much, Jessica. Thank you for supporting our guests.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going down to Sharonda Hankins Davis from North Carolina. Sharonda, you're on with Victoria. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know Victoria.
Yeah. I know Sharonda.
Yes.
Sharonda.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey,
yeah,
good evening. How are you?
Victoria.
Good.
Yes. Hello, Victoria. Thank you for sharing your story. Hope you're doing well.
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Sharonda, for coming on and being here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, thank
welcome
you. I appreciate
support.
It very much.
You're welcome. You're so welcome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for sharing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to come back to you again. We're going to get into
okay.
a little bit more. So I know Victoria has told her story over and over. And so I kind of would like, if she wants to go ahead and talk about, you know, after the trauma, what, you know, when you started on your healing journey and when you started learning about yourself, what was going on?
Yeah, well, like I said, my dad kept coming after me. I had graduated from high school, and I was going to business school. He came back after me and grabbed me and started rocking me in a rocking chair, and I freaked out and left the state. And that's where I met my first husband, who wouldn't feed me, was doing drugs, was selling all my stuff. My daughter was born too much prematurely. I'd lost 50 pounds being pregnant. He had cut me off from everybody, and I couldn't take her home until she was 5 pounds. She stayed there 2 months. He wouldn't let me see her. He'd go to my grandparents and say that we were going to go see her, and anyway, what would happen is that he would just take the money and use it for drugs. He was making he called it jailhouse cocaine. I didn't even know he was in jail. The main reason I got with him is because I told him what my dad did to me, and he said, if he ever does that to you again, I'll kill him, you know, my protector. I didn't think he would hurt me or my daughter. So I didn't bring her home until she was like 5 pounds, and then brought her home. And I don't know, she'd been home a week or two, and he hadn't helped me because he kept saying, ever since you had that baby, you don't pay no attention to me anymore. You know, so he was totally jealous.
Yeah.
And anyway, one night I was just exhausted. I said, could you please give her a bottle? Well, we had been giving her formula, you know, because my breast was dried up. And so anyway, he was all pissy and went and back in the back room because we had a hide a bed in the living room, and behind it was her room, and she was in a bassinet. So he just went back there and took this old bottle and stuck it in her mouth. You know, of course, she started crying. And I said, you need to make her a bottle, you know, fresh bottle. You can't give her that old thing. And so he went in, and he was, you know, upset. And then he came back, and all he would do is prop up the bottle. He never held her. You know, he would never hold her. And anyway, he propped up the bottle, and for a couple seconds, she wasn't crying, and then all of a sudden, she started crying again. And then I heard her go silent, and I heard him screaming, shut up, just shut up, just shut up. And I jumped up and raced around the corner, and here he's got her under the armpits, and he's shaking her like a rag doll, and she's 5 pounds. And And I have no idea how I got her away. But the next thing I know, there was a bar below us, so we lived above the bar. I remember sitting in between the two places, and I just said, you know, higher power, just help me figure out a way to get away from them. So next morning I woke up, and it came out of my mouth, like I said, from I don't know where, and it said, if you don't get a job, I'm leaving you, which was ridiculous because he watched me all the time, you know. But he didn't, as F the mind got a job. And, of course, then I left him because I knew he couldn't keep a job, you know. So I called everybody, and they're like, where have you been for the last year? I said, never mind, here's where I live, and help me get the hell out of here. And I'll tell you later. So anyway, I got divorced from him, and my dad right away came back into my life. And he found out. And that's when the horror began. That's when he made me sign a sex slave agreement. He took pornography of me. He tortured me. It was into S&M. He controlled everything, including body functions. If I sat with my legs crossed, I wasn't being submissive. If I sat my arms crossed, I wasn't being, you know, submissive. Once he sat at the table for about a half an hour asking if I really wanted to be my dad and not have sex with me and this, that, the other thing. And finally I said yes, and he stood up and slammed his hands on the table and said, that's the wrong answer, dragged me in the back room and raped me. And he continued to do this, I don't even know how long. And he had brought me to this thing in the beginning called The Sequel to the Story of O, and basically the story of O is a guy who brings this woman to a sexual training, slave training camp where she gets totally tortured the whole movie. And we were walking into the deal, and he asked the lady he was buying some tickets from. He says, so it was a sequel in where she went back to this camp. And he said, I heard this was a love story. And she goes, well, I guess you could call it that, you know. And anyway, so we sat right by the entrance exit, whatever you want to call it, into the movie theater. Pulled my blouse open and was fondling my breasts and had my pants halfway down and everything. And, you know, so I was 20 at that time. And anyway, he never touched my daughter. My grandparents were always watching her when he was doing these things. And that one time we went out dancing, and the one thing he kept doing is saying, you know, if you tell anybody, I will show your grandparents these pictures, these pornography pictures, it'll kill them, you know. And also he had threatened me. He said, if you ever leave me, and he had this underground black and white pornography of these women who were sexual slaves that were chained in people's basements, and kept telling me, wouldn't that be wonderful? I sent a picture in like that of you. And so he said, if you ever leave me, you know, I'll find you and I'll put you in a basement and, you know, chain you up there and then you'll never get away. And then one time when he was raping me in this apartment building, because he got his own apartment and he left his second wife, and I was beating on the walls and screaming, you know, and he was just laughing and saying, see, nobody cares. Nobody's going to ever help you, you know. And, yeah, and then one time we went out to this place dancing, and he told me to bring this guy over to the table. And after I danced with him, go dance with that guy, bring him over to the table. So I did. And, he gets the guy over there, and of course we're all drinking. And he says, boy, wouldn't you like to have sex with my daughter? And just on and on and on, kept buying the guy drinks, and he's like sloshy, you know, oh, yeah, it'll be wonderful, you know. So he just goes on and on and on, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what the hell's he going to do with this guy, you know. And so anyway, all of a sudden, he stands up, slams his hands on the table, and goes, I'm the only one that asks my daughter. Like in front of this whole great big, you know, dance hall where you go dancing. And just things like that all the time. I was waitressing, and he came in there, and he was putting his cigarette butts out and telling me I could only wait on him. I couldn't wait on my other customers, and told me that I had to quit my job because I was becoming too independent. And his ultimate fantasy, he called it fantasy, I call it my nightmare. You know, he calls them sex toys, I call them my torture devices. but he had, you know, would always bring me into pornography stores and buy all those things, you know, to torture me with. And he wanted to take me to Louisiana because we had different last names because my grandparents adopted me and marry me and raise her as our child. And he said, if you ever try to leave me, he said, I'm a well-known businessman and well-known in the church, and you're just a single mom on welfare, and I'll just tell them you're crazy and you're making all this shit up, and nobody's going to believe you, and I'll get custody of my daughter, you know. And I was scared to death and got to a point where I thought the only way I was going to get away from him and have him not hurt my daughter was to kill her and kill myself. That was my only out, I thought. Well, the second part, the sequel to the story of O, was this woman did so well in this training camp becoming a sexual slave that he got another woman for a slave in the movie, and then he got her a male slave. So that's what he was playing out in the very end, where he got another woman and a man. And I'm not going into all the details, but one night it just got really freaking weird. Weird what I've been telling you. And anyway, we all escaped and ended up going to police and ended up doing a rape kit and all that. And he got arrested. And the only thing that happened was he was court ordered to therapy. And he got sentenced on my birthday. And, and then his mom bailed him out of jail. When I asked her later on why she bailed him out of jail, she said because he was going to lose his job. And then she said, well, he said he was sorry. I said, sorry for what he did or sorry he got caught? I think he sort of got caught. And then 3 years later, the therapist in the group, first of all, they asked me to come in there and confront him in front of all the other perpetrators, and that ended me in the psych ward for 6 months. You know? And I was in that psych ward, so it was like a revolving door, and ended up at a state hospital. And that's when I was really, like, acting out a lot, like I'd be, even with my kids, I'd be crawling around my hands and my knees. I'd end up in the corner just all cuddling a ball and just, like, shaking, you know, and whimpering. And nobody knew what I was doing. And so they had diagnosed me with borderline personality disorder, which basically means you're lying. So me and my girlfriend used to call ourselves border liars. And until I got a proper diagnosis, which was multiple personality disorder. And you wouldn't think that would be a good thing to get a diagnosis, but for me it was good because if I did the same thing in the hospital, they'd say I was in a dissociative state rather than, you know, I was doing it for attention. You know, so the correct diagnosis helped a lot. And I got in and with a psychologist who I worked real intensely with for 13 years and then no longer had a diagnosis of MPD. I still have complex PTSD and some dissociation, but not two separate alters, you know? Like I might space out if I'm stressed, and I have a lot of services and stuff. And, of course, my kids are both grown, and I ended up on the Ms. Texas show. And if anyone wants to see that interview, it's Ms. Texas show with no spaces. And I tell my story about when I was used in prostitution when I was a teenager. And I'm not getting into that because that whole thing's on there. And I self-published a book. I started a grassroots organization 15 years ago called Oz, A Helping Hand for Healing Souls. I've done 2 speakouts on domestic violence, and I've done 1 on child abuse, and I've got another one coming up the end of September. For child abuse awareness. I was going to do it last April, but what happened was, I don't know, well, I'm sure you all know, but all the riots here over the George Floyd murder were going on, and they were burning down the city, so I decided not to have it. But I'm going to have it at the end of September, and one of the big things I'm doing is called the Close Eye Project. So any survivors that are interested, they can either contact me, and I'll give you that information later on, but you can contact me. I'm asking people to send me clothing, and I don't even say the time you were abused, because most of many of us, many, many years, you know. But just, you know, maybe right. Go a secondhand store, garage sale, whatever, find a piece of clothing that kind of you can relate to, and either write down what happened to you, how you felt at the time, or how you feel about now, or what your hope for the future is. And I've got a bunch of clothes already, and I've done this in Texas, and I'll be hanging them up in trees out here in Minnesota, you know, the clothesline, and then hanging the clothes out. I'm going to have a survivor speak out. That's I'm calling the silent speak out. And then I'm going to have a survivor speak out. I'm going to have professionals are coming. I'll have resources, and I'll have NASCA materials out there. And I'm going to have a children's area, which is going to be away from where the adults are. And I'm going to have people that are going to keep an eye on the kids. And I'm going to have, you know, I don't know if people go on Pinterest, but if you go on there and you just put in feeling charts or feelings, you can find a whole bunch of different charts with different faces with the feelings on, which I helped me a lot when I was first in there, because I didn't have any feelings. I was totally numb. And anyway, I'm going to put them up where the kids are going to be so that they can do drawings and stuff, but I want them away from where the speakers are, you know.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
That's great what you're doing. And Jessica, you know, is saying, or it was either Jessica or Elizabeth said that because you went through so much that you're mm-hmm. going to be, you know, used
yeah.
so much
yeah.
by higher power.
Oh, yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
look at all you're doing. It's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
But the question I had was, whatever happened to your dad? You said that he ended up going to prison. But how did
no,
you
yeah, well, he
end
did,
up
but he didn't stay that long. He got bailed out by my grandmother. It was just until his sentencing. And, you know, I mean, she bailed him out before his sentencing because he was going to lose his job. Because he was like the 10th highest computer programmer in the nation. I mean, he was very intelligent.
Wow.
And, of course, he used all his intelligence for evil, you know. And anyway,
right.
Yeah. So anyway, I was also afraid to be smart because I thought that meant you were going to, you know, use it to hurt people. And anyway, because that's just, you know, and all the role models in my family were, you know, just so negative. But there were two women in my life, one being my AA sponsor, who 34 years ago, I met through the Battered Woman Shelter. And she saw me guzzling out of a bottle and asked me if I thought I was an alcoholic. I said, yeah, I am an alcoholic, but I'm one of those alcoholics who can't be helped. She's like, what kind of alcoholic is that? And I started telling her, and I've been sober ever since. From drugs and alcohol.
Wow.
So that's when I go out and speak, I say, alcohol and drugs aren't my problem. They were my solution. And I don't know if you know back when it was MySpace.
The life you went through. The life
you know,
went
back in the MySpace thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember MySpace? Well, I went on there, and there was
yeah,
a survivors group, and I put on a picture of me when I was a year old, and I wanted somebody to make it look like I was going through a tunnel, you know, because that's how I feel, that I was in like a dark tunnel or cave, and there was just this tiny light that I kept going towards, you know, and there was all these obstacles in the
right.
tunnel, which were all these other perpetrators, right? And when I got out the other side, there were, you know, and other survivors and everything else. And, you know, where I healed, but I remembered all the other people screaming in there that I feel that I have to go back in and help. But anyway, so he made me this awesome book cover, and I self-published a book. Right now I've got two women's studies professors that are writing my story. And my book's called Journey Within.
So what's the name of your book?
Journey Within.
What's
it will be.
Name?
It's not out yet. Yeah. Yeah. Journey Within,
oh,
and like
out.
Within myself, you know. No, it's not out yet. The problem is I got injured and I have to go out to my storage shed, because when I was seeing that psychologist, you know, she diagnosed me with 31 personalities and fragments of personalities. And so she had all the altars reading in this journal. Well, the one altar was reading what another altar wrote, which was something she didn't agree with because she didn't know about it. So she wanted to kill that altar. So then the psychologist had to inform her that if she killed that altar, she'd die too, you know. So it was quite, you know, and then someone be suicidal. So she says, you have to sign a safety agreement, you know, whoever's suicidal, and then, you know, 7 or 8 would come out and sign it. You know, they were all honest. And I was constantly in the psych ward. I can't even tell you how many times, you know, just revolving door. But I have a poem before you go to anyone back that I'd like to read to you. And it's kind of, let me tell you that quick story. So I was on MySpace in that group. And this lady starts writing to me, asking me all these questions about my childhood and things I'd been through and everything. And then she says to me, Joy asked me questions like legal stuff and stuff, you know. And, well, I didn't know none of that, but I started researching and sent her links. And I didn't hear from her for a while. I was like, well, you know, some people just, you know, they come in your life and then they go. Well, then she writes back to me. I don't know how much longer later. I still got a frog in my throat. She says, I want to thank you for what you told me about your story and all the information you gave me. She says, because my 4-year-old granddaughter will never be molested by her father again. And that's when I knew.
Wow.
That's when I knew. That was like 16 years ago. But I changed my name so I could publicly speak. And I changed it to Victoria Kelly. Victoria means victorious. My middle name was always Ruth, and that means spirit. And Kelly means warrior. So it's Victoria, spirit warrior. And I wrote a poem called The Strengths of a Warrior Woman. I gather hope from hearing the struggles. I gather the hope from hearing the struggles of those who have walked similar paths. Fragments of their stories paralleling mine. I grasp onto their words for the portion I savor as they saturate my mind and soul. I have been told I am courageous, that I've survived against unbeatable odds. Yet when I find myself alone with my thoughts, my memories, survival is just not enough. What happened here? Okay. My inner voice and my guides speak to me. They whisper their truths and teach my mind and fill my heart. I am more comfortable being with myself. Then the peaceful moments come as if a breeze is passing through my being. My energy is tapped. Creativity explodes into the paper and the canvas. I never knew how to love myself, for my needs were not to be met. Given away, I always wondered what an awful baby I must have been. The voice from the mother of all ages insists that I have always been wanted and loved. The tears from days gone by swell up in my eyes and harden in my throat. Trapped inside are hopes I wonder if I shall ever see. When I am in need, the phone seems so far away and cold and silent, out of reach on the wall. I push myself off the chair, forcing movement, grasping on the hope and trust. I seek out numbers from people who have promised to be there for me, even when I am down, sinking into my sea of depression. The phone's voice is a tone of emptiness and fear, tormenting my ears, soaking into my brain. Yet I gain the courage to dial. Sparks fly through my senses, and a voice reawakens my belief that I need not struggle alone anymore. Words flowing like music. You are accepting me just as I am, not trying to put bandages on me, not trying to cover my pain, offering suggestions, not shutting me up. There are no cliches, no insistent demands. A listening, concerned, supportive vocal tone helps me to believe that I deserve to live and to be happy and that things will be okay. For you can hear my story and not try to make it go away, not tell me to forget, not silence my anger or tears, giving me permission to feel to the depths of my soul. Your acceptance helps me to believe that I have not gone crazy. I can live with all my reality, accepting my past a moment at a time. As I am now just feeling again, your words are unlike those who judge and blame. You find our commonalities, showing me our struggles, holding many shared feelings. Your courage helps me to see the courage in myself. Your hope opens my eyes to the great opportunities of today. Living through and in the moment fills my heart with joy, knowing I survived another crisis, knowing the caring concern moves through the phone lines, filling my entire being. Help me to now take out my hidden writings that have remained in storage, the ones I have been afraid to let another person's eyes see, another one judge, and help me transform them into rays of hope to others. I return to my writing and drawing, hoping to each day somehow tap into the strength and compassion which I have been privileged to enjoy. I discover my truths and weave words and ideas to share a bit of the gifts which I have been gained. I try to give freely of myself the joy which I have found. Oh, Mother of the Earth, remind me to visit nature. Stand sure-footed on your sacred soil. Remind me of my roots. Give me strength. Nourish me up through the ground. Enlighten me with the wisdom and lives of the warrior women who have come and gone before me. Remind me of your love that speaks through the voices and from the souls of the ones you have sent to me. Those who give their gifts, freely sharing their secrets, hidden beneath layers of pain, opening up their wounds for a chance to help another. Inviting the exchange of words, making souls together, transforming the beauty of the moment into the memories of a life and of the history of all time.
That is amazing. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. Have you read that? Read that?
Yeah. That's one that I published in my book. That's one I self-published, and I've read it a lot of places, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. It's so meaningful. You'll have to go into it. You'll have to say it one time and then kind of interpret between the lines, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's so for all of us, but it's so unique to your travel.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, talking about it and, taking it apart segment by segment and talking about it would be phenomenal. I'm going to go to Elizabeth. I want to ask what she wants to comment about your point. Elizabeth?
Yeah. Victoria.
What do you think?
I'm American native, and I want you to know the true identity of me. May I say a blessing to you in my language? May I have your condolence?
Yeah.
Meheshikasa Mahaya. Mahanya ishi nahakore inene ishi mina aho ama mahaya papa ishi mima bebe. Oho ni, oho kona amant ni amalese egotish in oka America. Mahane, we must all join together as one nation. Bakashino inene kata. And be one blood red the blessings may be upon you, the blessings may be upon the evil unclean spirits that come upon my earth, our earth, of our people, that battled and fought for comfort, and our women that have suffered and sacrificed for all mankind. Mother Earth is looking after us. She is watching and hearing everything that is voiced with our spirits, and she must conquer. And she must come before them that have conquered us and injured us as we, the survivors of our universe. May the great spirit be with us all. May the great spirit be with you, I, Pamela, and all that are on the panel today. That the great spirit may bless us. The great spirit must unconquer the enemy that has come upon us, and that the United States must respect the survivors of our universe.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, can I ask you what you thought of Victoria's poem? What came to mind when you heard her poem?
I see that she has hidden things that she's not exposed. I'm sorry, Victoria, I just feel it in my spirit. You have not exposed the true atrocities that you really experienced as a child. It's okay. It'll come soon.
Oh, gosh, you haven't heard my other three recordings, honey. You got to go back and listen to my other tapes.
I just don't want to keep repeating the same thing.
Especially since right now I've got a vision for the future with my organization, my grassroots organization. And but I've been with NASCA for I think 11 years. I met Bill, and before that, I never really spoke a lot about the child abuse, basically because I was 21 when I escaped. And once I went into the psych ward to get help, and I was suicidal, and the psychiatrist said to me, you must have enjoyed it or you would have kept going back to him and you wouldn't have stayed so long. So I had that fear instead of realizing that I was, you know, programmed and conditioned.
You're the victim.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
But I was afraid to say anything
until I met Bill, you know, and Bill and I talked, and then he won me on his show. And so I've got three shows, back shows that, you know, that's on NASCA that are pretty heavy, yeah.
I'm thankful for NASCA. My honor goes to them.
Yeah.
My honor is respected. They respect my culture. A lot of people are not on NASCA that are American Native that have actually experienced the atrocities that we have experienced. There are murdered and indigenous Native American women and children all throughout the United States continent. We're finding more murdered children than beyond imagination. We, as women, you and I and Pamela and all the panel, express our opinions on how we feel about why government, why you hurt us, why you oppress us, why you have a right to not fund us, why you have a right to not give us any kind of compensation for what we endured in our lifetime as human beings on this planet.
Yeah.
And I'm with you, honey, Victoria. I respect you talking this evening. I know you're not a Native American. I have a lot of spirituality.
I always say an AA religion is for people afraid to go into hell. Spirituality is for people who have already been there.
I understand that, love. I understand that.
I'm very spiritual, and I love the Native American spirituality. I have a very good friend who's Native American who, every time he comes to our meetings, he shares these wonderful stories, you know. And there was this guy that we have a Native American newspaper out here in Minneapolis, and I read this guy's story, and he just published a book, too, about growing up on the reservation where his grandmother was in one of the schools that the government had, you know, put all the kids in and how horribly they treated them. And his grandmother corporally punished him all the time because, you know, that's what they had done to them.
Yeah. I'm a child of the family that were put in boarding schools.
All the Native Americans were. They tried to annihilate them off the face of the earth.
Well, my family, Victoria, has been here since 1612.
Yeah.
And we have been violated
Yeah.
Beyond and beyond. But
yeah.
We our voice is now being heard by the Great
Finally.
Spirit. It's brought us to comfort zone.
Finally. Yes.
And we all must, and thank goodness for Victoria, for Pamela and Mark I can't remember all their names. There's so many
sure.
on the panel.
Yeah.
I can't recall all their names.
Yeah.
I thank the Great Spirit that we all are able to express our opinions. We are express our pain, our injuries that was done upon us that no one knows about. Unless we're here talking and speaking about what has happened to us in the United States in 1492, truth to know.
Mm-hmm.
Our government doesn't care. They don't care about us.
No, because they don't take responsibility. They're going to do that.
What's happening right now with our Lakota Nation. We just had an event this past weekend for the murdered and Indigenous Native women. How many were murdered in Canada? How many were killed? Massive graves have been found.
Yeah.
Some children were killed without a cause. Without a cause. No reason.
What reason
to kill
and think
our
of what
people?
They, think of what they survived before they got killed, too.
I can't imagine. I have nightmares and traumas over my ancestors and my people.
Yes.
What the little children had endured as little children that were killed and murdered without a cause. They did not deserve that.
Of course not.
So my spirit goes to you and the women in the universe and all the more people in the universe that the Great Spirit must come to unity, respect, and honor for the people that had already sacrificed on this earth, America.
Their strength that kept going to keep bring us here.
Right.
You know?
Thank you,
I want to make sure to give out the address if people want to send me clothing.
Yeah.
Before it gets too late. You can send it in my name, Victoria Kelly, KELLY, at General Delivery. 2168 7th Avenue, Anoka, Minnesota, 55303. And I'll be getting a P.O. box, but I haven't been able to afford it yet because I only get $104 a month, and all the money's coming out of my pocket. And I'm trying to I have bumper stickers for sale that say children should be seen, heard, and believed. And if anybody wants to get a hold of me, they can get a hold of me at my email address, which is Oz1, which is spelled AHHHS and the number 1 at yahoo.com. And I have a Blog Talk radio show for Oz on Thursday nights at 7:30 Central Time. And I also, I'm on Clapper. I just started on there, and I'll be telling people about the rally and keeping people updated on what's going on. Minneapolis, we had 5 survivors of sexual assault that got together and raised enough money to build a survivor's memorial. So if you go on the internet under just Google survivor's memorial, Minneapolis or Minnesota, and you can see the monuments and the seating area and everything that we have out at Boom Island Park. The unfortunate part is I think it's going to cost me about $2,000 to have the event out there, and I might have to take it to a smaller park. But my hope is, because I've gotten a lot of support from people saying they'll help me out, that I will be able to have it there on the 28th, and it'll be all day because I've got a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be coming up. And we're going to have a candlelight vigil for the children that died at the hand of their abusers and those that died of suicide. Also, after that, we're going to extinguish the candles. We're going over a bridge over the Mississippi River and extinguish candles on the one side. We're going to relight them, have a celebration for survivors, thrivers, warriors, and conquerors.
Wow.
That's amazing. You got a lot going on.
And I've got a friend that I've got a friend that wants me to try to figure out not only how to do like a Facebook Live where people can just comment, but to have something that I can have a interactive with other people. So if people want to tell their stories, then I'm hoping to have availability for that. But people have to email me because, you know, I'll have a few people that'll, you know, already agree to speak out. And I'll have open mic where people can come up and tell their stories if they want. And even on my Blog Talk Radio show that I have on Thursday nights, another gal from NASCA, Amy Anna Soto, she's an artist, and she did 7 paintings to raise money. And she also, one of the paintings we're using is our for publicity and stuff. It shows up. We had open mic and all kinds of stuff. And anyway, I'm going to be using that for the advertisements and stuff and put up stuff in Minneapolis.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Man, Minneapolis is doing a lot. And you're in, Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So give them your email again, Victoria. Give out
my
your email
is Oz for the organization, and it stands for A Helping Hand for Healing Souls. So it's AHHHS @yahoo.com. And the only people that are working on it right now is me and Amy Anna Soto. I've been doing this for 15 years and organizing, networking with different groups out here and in Minneapolis. And when I was in Texas, I did it in Texas, Better Women's Shelters and things. And that's what I've been doing since like 1986. And I belong to an organization called Whisper, Women Hurt and Systems Prostitution Engaged in Revolt, did a juvenile prostitution prevention project and a whole bunch of other things. So I haven't, quote, worked, but I've been a professional volunteer since 86. I was told people the reason
why
I'm a volunteer.
That's
do you know why the reason I'm a volunteer,
that's
I tell people, is because people don't normally fire volunteers. If you can't do what they assign you, they give you a different thing to do, even if it's licking envelopes, you know. But I consider myself an expert because I'm a survivor. I think every survivor is an expert. As far as I'm concerned, you don't need the letters after your name, you know.
Right. I'm going to bring Mary Ellen on to interact with
you.
We still have a lot of time.
Okay.
Mary Ellen?
Uh-huh.
Yes. I just wanted to say that poem was absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
You're such a good writer and a wonderful speaker. And it's really impressive to hear all that you have going on. My goodness. I don't know how you keep on top of it.
I have to. I have to keep my mind busy.
Yeah. Well, congratulations and thank you for all of it because I'm sure so many people are helped. It's just amazing.
Thank you so much.
And
I appreciate
I'm
it.
I'm glad I turned in tonight to hear all of this.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you're able to show up. Yeah.
You made my evening. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. We're going to Jessica Raleigh. She's our Delaware ambassador. Go ahead, Jessica.
I just want to say thanks again, Victoria, and I, hats off to you. I'll get in contact and volunteer to help you any way I can.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're in this together.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And my favorite thing is all people smell in the same language, and we have to look at our commonalities rather than our differences.
Right.
Because we have a lot in common. We have much more in common than we do different. And I have to focus on, you know, the light and positive energy and just walk away from the negativity, you know. I was told, don't be angry, don't be angry. And I said, I use my anger to speak out against, you know, these horrible things that are happening against children. And I said, it depends on what you do with your feelings, not what feelings you have. I could be out beating up perpetrators, you know, but I'm not, you know. Yeah.
Right.
But it took me a long time to get in touch with my feelings, you know. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jessica.
My pleasure, Pamela.
Okay, so I still have a question, and I have to go back, but
No problem.
Whatever happened to your dad? I mean, we never got to hear what happened.
He was court ordered.
Didn't he go to?
He was court ordered that therapy for sexual offenders. And I got a call 3 years later, and they said, he graduated. I said, how'd you graduate from a group like that? And they said, he said, well, all the other people in the group vote on whether or not you worked on your issues. So I told him what, like, a medium experience, what I thought was a medium, you know. And he goes, oh, my God, he never told us that. I go, of course he didn't, you know. And then he tried to turn it around on me, the therapist, and say, well, if you would have come in here, confronted him when we asked you to, we would have known all that. I go, do you think I'm going to come into a room with him where I'm in hiding and come into a room with him and a bunch of perpetrators and confront him? Are you crazy? And I said, just thinking about it ended me up in the hospital for 6 months in a psych ward. Just thinking about it, not even doing it, you know. Yeah, they tried to turn on me and say it was my fault.
Of course. He was wealthy and connected too, powerful, when he had connected.
Yeah, but I don't think that he used his money, because he tried to get a public defender, and not just that, at the very end he said, yeah, I did all those things to him. But he couldn't really deny it because he had pornography of me, and he had the slave contract and all this other stuff in his closet, and all these torture devices and lingerie and things like that, you know. So he couldn't deny it. So he goes, well, yeah, I did all that, but I'm not her father anyway. So they had to fly my mom in from Texas to give her blood to prove, you know, so we could do a paternity test. And sure enough, he was my dad, you know. And yeah, he, you know, he finally, yeah, I did it all. Well, he didn't even have a choice because it, you know. But it was interesting because I went to the police station, and the police officer asked me, he said, well, when you went, it was a certain night we were talking about, he goes, well, when you went over to his house, what happened? I go, well, he made love to me. And the officer stopped the tape and backed it up and said, I'm going to ask you that question differently. He said, when you went over to your dad's house, did you want to have sex with him? And I go, absolutely not. But see, he had trained me so well to say certain words, or I'd get tortured. And at one point he said, it doesn't matter what you do, I will always find something wrong with it, because the only way I can be sexually gratified is to see you in pain. And, you know, the more pain you're subjected to, the more pain you can endure, the more pain you're subjected to. And my psychologist said he would have killed you. He just died 2 years ago, and I cannot tell you. My uncle posted on there that he died, and I posted on Facebook. I said, normally you can't shut me up, but I can't even find the words to tell you the kind of freedom that I feel knowing he's not on this earth anymore.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Man.
But I did want to tell you, too, that I talked to my mom later on, and I said, you know, I said, why did you give us up? She said, because I just had this feeling that you guys were in danger. And she was right. We were, you know. Because I ended up in the psych ward in the state hospital, and I came home one weekend, and I told my grandma the way I was acting. And I said, was I like this when I came to live with you? She said, yeah, you were. I go, well, what'd you do? She goes, well, I took you to the doctor. What'd the doctor say? I mean, well, he examined you, and I said, well, what did he say? She said, the doctor said we should never tell you because it won't affect you. I said, obviously it's affecting me. I'm locked up in a state hospital. I'll probably never get out. You know, at least if you tell me, I'll know what I'm dealing with, and maybe I can get help. So she said that my vaginal opening was way too big for a child that age, and they said that I had already been sexually abused at a year old when I came to live with them.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So my mother was right. Okay. We were in danger, but she didn't know. She didn't know. And then anyway, I ended up moving out with my mom about, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago in Texas. And then she went ballistic on me and I left. But we got reunited before she died. She came out here. My daughter took her in and did respite for her. And we, you know, we made amends. She made amends to me and everything. And I told her, she always said she was a bad mother. And I said, you know what? I said, in one way, you're a really good mother. I said, because you knew that your kids were in danger and you sent us away. I said, I can't imagine what my life would have been like if you would have had access to me every single day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that person, I don't even think you like to call him your dad, but look at
I call him my sperm donor because it's the only thing he ever did that was good.
Right.
He
so
donated
he was
his sperm.
Totally what? Was he totally like obsessed with you? Like obsession?
Mm-hmm.
Some kind of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was he ever diagnosed?
Yeah, of course not.
Obsessed.
Abusers don't get diagnosed.
Oh.
No.
Oh.
No, he had, you know, she didn't care what he did. Matter of fact, it was the state of Minnesota that prosecuted him, you know, because they went after him for when I was 17, because my mom was a witness to what he did. Remember I told you she walked
right.
in, and then he orchestrated the three of us engaged in sexual acts.
Right.
And anyway, so she she didn't testify. She told you know, and then of course he admitted to it, but they told me that he's been doing this to women, men, and children all his life. And the only difference is all of them are still on the run and in hiding. And I'm the only one that ever told the authorities because my mother told him about,
man.
You know, about all the people that he had hurt and abused. And he tried to say that my mother was promiscuous, and that's why he didn't know whether he was really my father. He's the one that was promiscuous, but you know what? We don't call men promiscuous.
What?
Just women and children.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it pisses me off.
Well, we've
you
got,
know, and,
believe it or
yeah.
not, 2 minutes left.
Yeah.
And so I
yeah.
want you to take a
well,
minute
thanks for having
and
me.
Talk to our audience.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're so welcome, Victoria. We really appreciate all you're doing for the cause, for survivors.
Yeah.
And just take a minute and tell the audience.
I'll tell you what, that we need to speak out for the children because they can't speak out for themselves. Nobody spoke out for me. And I'm just trying to share my experiences and strength and hope because I want to make things different for the children of this world, because if we really believe the children are our future, we need to be out there, we need to be vocal, and we need to say things when we see things happening to children. Even if we think there's something happening, we need to do something.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And the whole world,
so,
not one person or, you know.
So thank you, Victoria. Thank you to the whole panel for tonight and for NASCA. This is Pamela Lane Lockridge. We'll have a topic night tomorrow night. And I just want to say good night to everybody. If you see something happening to a child, say something, please.
Love Talk Radio.